In acknowledgement of Hanukkah, let us begin today with these words from Reverend Lynn Unger, a Unitarian Universalist minister that identifies as Jewish. Come down from the hills. Declare the fighting done. Be bold, declare victory even when the temple is wrecked and the tyrants have not retreated, only coiled back like a snake prepared to strike again. Come down. Try to remember a life gentled to daily acts of domestic faith, the pot set to boil, the bed made up, the table set in calm expectation that when the sun sets, we will still be here. Come down and settle. Unlearn the years of hiding, light fires that can be seen for miles, that dance and spark and warm the frozen marrow. Set lamps in the window. Declare your presence, your loyalties, the truths for which you do not expect to have to die. It would take a miracle, you say, to carve such a solid life out of the shell of fear. I say, you are the stuff from which such miracles are made. Let us acknowledge this small miracle of being together this morning as we journey together through our time of worship and reflection. Good morning, my name is Casey Marie Pandel, and I will be your worship associate this morning. I now invite Jody Balloon to come and light our chalice. I now invite you to join me in saying the words on the screen. This flame affirms the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the fire of commitment. Love is the doctrine that we share. The quest for truth is our sacrament, and service is our prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve human need. Thus do we covenant with one another. We do ask that you remember that if you are interested in helping out with our spirit grant, that that's still something that we're working with. Ladies.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Laurel Estrada and Eleanor Nunez. We are here to talk to you about the Spirit Fund. We were given a grant, and it is for $10,000, assuming we match that $10,000 by raising $10,000 expressly for this purpose. So we are about 14% there and hoping to get to our goal of $10,000 by January 1st. And the good news is, well, besides that we're getting this wonderful grant, everyone who donates $100 or more toward this effort will get a ticket to an event that Eleanor will talk about shortly. We are using this grant money to beef up our services and provide a creative arts series. And so you'll have one ticket to one event in that series. And Eleanor's going to give you more specifics about the series.
All right. So as you can see, our pitch is 100 with 100. If we have 100 congregants donate $100, we will meet our $10,000 match donation. And as you can see, if we are able to raise $10,000, the Spirit Grant will give us a check of an extra $10,000. If we only raise $8,000, they will only give us $8,000. So it is a matching grant. You have these nice little envelopes. So when the offertory comes around, if you would like to put money specifically for the Spirit Fund, you have the option of doing it in the envelope. Otherwise, you can just write it on the memo line for the check. But this money is going to guest speakers, so you will have more guest speakers during your services. We are having this music and drama series, and yes, for every $100 donation, we're actually giving two free tickets. That way, you can take a friend. And it's to any of the five performances of your choice. So please consider donating to this cause. It's going to be really, really great. So thank you.
This month's food challenge is canned meat. Each Sunday, our children collect food donations to provide food for those in need. We participate in this interfaith monthly food challenge, and it is just one of the many ways that our congregation serves the larger community. We invite the children to sit up front for the Time for All Ages presentation before going to their educational classes.
Well, good morning, kids. We have a couple of people who are helping us out with our Time for All Ages this morning. Bruce and Debbie Reback will be talking in just a minute about part of their tradition that they wanted to share with all of you this morning. But I am going to start with the history lesson part. And this is the Hanukkah story. And it's kind of a big story, but we're going to go through it really quickly here. But it's a story about a king who ruled over ancient Israel, and this king wasn't such a nice guy. He really didn't like people who thought and worshipped differently than he did. And so he demanded that if you didn't pray to the Greek gods and share in his same culture, you were in trouble. Well, this was a problem for people who were Jewish, who still wanted to partake in Jewish traditions like studying Torah. And this made some of the people, Jewish people, very upset, and they decided to disobey the king. And one of those people was a man named Mattathias. And he and his sons were joined by other Jewish people, and they fought back. They went up into the mountains, and they kind of planned and strategized, and they came out fighting against this injustice. And one of the things that they were fighting for was to have control of the temple. This was the place that they had worshipped in. That was their faith, tradition, home. It was a place that was very, very important to them, and it had been taken away. And so what happened was, when they finally got back into the temple, the way the story goes was there wasn't enough oil to light the lamp for the period of time that they needed to bring the temple back into being a sacred place. And miraculously, the story goes, the oil actually lasted for 8 days and 8 nights. And so this is why we celebrate Hanukkah for 8 days. And Debbie and Bruce are going to talk in just a moment about the menorah a little bit and how we light those candles for those 8 days. But today, of course, tonight is the first night of Hanukkah. And so that's why we're sharing this story with you today. So I'm going to turn this over to Debbie and Bruce to share a little bit about the tradition that is meaningful to them and what they wanted you to know about it.
Yeah, so guys, I grew up lighting menorah when I was a child, and all through my adult life I've done that. And it's been a very powerful symbol for me and my family. And usually we light the menorah at sundown. So we won't be lighting the menorah today, but at sundown we would normally traditionally light the menorah. Jewish holidays usually start on the sundown the day before. So this is the first night of Hanukkah. It lasts for 8 nights because of the miracle of the oil in the temple. And I guess for me, it's just a very traditional time, especially around food. And so when we light the candles, we also eat latkes and have things that are fried to remind us that oil was a very significant part of this holiday. So we eat donuts as well, which is really kind of cool. But we also have some other good protein-y things in there, too. So not just all the fun stuff. But anyway, so for me, this holiday is traditional in that I'm passing along all those ideas and wishes that my grandparents and great-grandparents wished for us as I was growing up. And I know Bruce has also some traditions from his family.
Well, for me, growing up, we celebrated Hanukkah at my grandparents' house. When we did the candle, for me, it gave me a very big warmth, very comfort for me to light candles. And because it went to close, it was dark outside, so that made it even more special. And then we took the menorah and we put it in the window to show that we lit the candle, lit the menorah.
So there's a special way to light a menorah.
Yeah.
You want to go ahead?
Okay.
Here, I'll hold this for you.
So this is the shamash. We light the shamash first, and then we set on the first night. We take the shamash. We say the blessing, Baruch Adonai in the Lakalam. So Hanukkah, while lighting the candle. And then the second night, we do it again. And we light from
the second to the first.
Second to the first. So we go right here to light the first candle. Light the second night first, and then the third night. And we do that. Night.
So the shamash is the helper candle. So everybody needs a helper, right? So this candle lights all the other candles. Of course, it's not the same candle because that candle has also burnt with all the others. So having lit all eight candles, that was my very favorite night because that's when the whole menorah was lit up and it's just amazingly beautiful. And if you know anything about Hanukkah candles, they don't last very long. So you have to watch because everything kind of just goes down quickly. So yeah, but it's a really fun time.
Well, let's thank Debbie and Bruce for sharing part of their tradition. As we begin our time of sharing joys and sorrows, I'm going to ask our worship associate to light a candle for World AIDS Day for all the people that we've lost and all the people who are struggling and dealing with the challenge of HIV and AIDS. I'm going to also ask her to light a candle for all of our Jewish friends, both within our community and without, who are celebrating Hanukkah tonight. Because I know right now, in particular, with the rise of anti-Semitism here in the United States, the different incidents we've seen, this has been a particularly challenging time for a lot of Jewish communities. And we certainly recognize our friends with Temple Beth Tikva and the challenges they've faced lately as well. I now invite those of you who do have a brief personal joy or sorrow you would like to share this morning to come forward and do so. A reminder, these are the personal events in your life that are too great, too joyful, or too sorrowful to hold alone. So I invite you forward for this time of sharing.
Hi, I'm Mary Botts, and this one is just too great to share alone, and that's that I'm having a coffee sale in the back. So after, you can buy coffee, and there's also some greenery.
And I'd like to light a candle in remembrance of all the people who are lighting their first candle on their Advent wreaths, which is what I was raised with. So if you have an Advent wreath with four candles on it, today is the first Sunday to light that candle.
I light my candles for my husband who survived the fires and for my sons who are coming in here for Christmas, and both my children after many years that we're not doing, almost 10 years.
I wanted to light a candle for my belief in all of the junior high kids who on Monday were navigating receiving Bibles on the city walk right outside the junior high. And I am believing in their critical thinking when we have that type of lack of inclusivity that's happening right outside our school. We have Jewish children, atheist children, Muslim children, and I know that our kiddos are critical, and I know that they can reflect and decide for themselves, so I'm just thinking about them.
Good morning. My name is Carolyn Brislon. As some or all of you know, I suffered a stroke on the 9th of November, and I have one close friend left in Boise, Idaho, where I grew up. And she called me Friday and she said, "Well, monkey see, monkey do." And I said, "No, you've had a stroke." And she said, "Yes." And I'm not able to reach her this morning by phone. So I asked for your good thoughts to her that she's recovering as I have. Thank you.
Good morning. God, I had an overwhelming week of all bad stuff. Yesterday would have been my mom's 84th birthday, and it's the holidays, and it's weird that she's not here. And my mother-in-law's aunt died, and she and her husband were super helpful to my in-laws when they were first starting out, and they couldn't go to the funeral because my father-in-law broke his back a few weeks ago, and he's not paralyzed. But he's now, as of 2 days ago, he's home from the hospital. He's not doing well, and I'm very stressed out about that, so.
In January, I shared a sorrow that my workplace was forced to lay off their entire force. And I had struggled throughout the year to find good work. And just this week, I've been asked back by my original employer to rejoin them. So now that sour has turned into a joy.
It is every year on World AIDS Day, one thing that means a lot to me to remember. In 1987, my grandfather died of AIDS. And even with a loving family and support from the gay community and everything, it was still incredibly rough. So I know we're not done yet, but what we have done, how far we have moved history toward acceptance and toward taking things seriously medically, and my grandfather with his whole family around him and his doctor fighting for him and everything that a lot of people didn't have, still got kicked out of the hospital when the administration found out he was HIV positive. That doesn't happen the way it used to. We are moving the right direction. We will get there. I know we will.
I feel so, Brad Woodhull, I feel so very fortunate to be here in the company of all these people, and as well as I am. But there are two major concerns. One of them is the word paradise, which lost its meaning on November 8th. Those people are going to be suffering for the next few years, most of them will never recover anything like they had when the fire struck. The other major concern is that 1,000-plus people south of our border who don't have any expectations of coming to this country without many further problems. Both of those events are worth your prayers. Thank you.
I just want to light a candle for George Herbert Walker Bush, who, while I may not have agreed with the platform, believe that he really wanted to make this a kinder America.
I've noticed at this time of year, we have a lot of joys and sorrows to share. It seems to be December is a month, as we go through the holidays, as we look toward the new year, a lot of things come up for us, a lot of reflection time, a lot of acknowledgement of the things in our lives and in our world that we wish were different or better, and also hopefully a time of gratitude. I invite you after the service to go to what was formerly just the magazine table, but the end by the kitchen door is now our caring table, and Debbie Reback and some other folks are organizing, having cards there. There are blank cards. If you've heard something this morning where you would like to make a card for people in the congregation to sign for someone, please do so. It is something where we were all invited to pitch in and send messages of comfort and care to those who might need it. So I invite you to stop by there in the social hall after the service. And going forward today, we keep all the joys and sorrows we've heard in our minds, knowing so much has remained unspoken.
Let us move into a time of meditation, prayer, and reflection. We are in the midst of the season of celebration. Celebrations of the birth of new hope, of the festival of lights, of the triumph of freedom. Soon the darkness of the year will lift, and the time of light will grow stronger and longer. And we gather with an anticipation of hope for peace on earth and in our homes. We gather in acknowledgement of those who have been lost too, friends and loved ones who we have lost over the past year. On World AIDS Day, we acknowledge those who have been lost to AIDS over the years and those who still struggle with its challenges. We acknowledge the bravery of our youth, their ability to use their minds and hearts to build a better future for all who will come long after we are gone. We acknowledge those this holiday season who are dealing with recovery from illness, medical events, those who are feeling lonely and lost. We gather in acknowledgement of Advent and Hanukkah and solstice and the many winter holidays that faith traditions from around the world celebrate. Let us take a moment of silence together to consider all we celebrate and all we lament at this time of year. Tonight, Jewish families, some from this congregation and some all over the world, will light candles, a candle, one candle, for the first night of Hanukkah. And we too light a candle this morning. We stoke the flame in our hearts. We invite in the light that flickers and offers hope and helps us journey onward through the dark toward a future that may be uncertain but can still be shaped by our light. Let us never forget that no matter what happens, we always have the choice to light a candle.
Thank you.
organs, hymnals, and pews. Much of our language is Christian, church, theology, minister, reverend, salvation, good news, communion, and mission, just to name a few. During my final year of seminary, I realized that I had become 100% UU and 100% Jewish. I know that this is arithmetically impossible, but in the mathematics of my heart, it is deeply true. I'm not half Jewish and half UU. There is no choosing. Both traditions have shaped me in fundamental ways. Both traditions are necessary parts of my life today. I cannot be less than completely Jewish and completely UU.
There is a meme going around. I've even seen it on t-shirts. It goes like this. It says, imagine if your cell phone battery was at 10%, but it lasted for 8 days. Now you get Hanukkah, right? A tongue-in-cheek explanation, of course, but perhaps indicative of the depth or lack of depth of many people's understanding of this holiday. And certainly Hanukkah, it's by no means the most important Jewish holiday. That might go to Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur. But Hanukkah is big here in the United States, partly as an antidote to the cultural oversaturation of Christmas. There's also a visual tie-in to Unitarian Universalism that makes it a natural one for us to lift up during this season. So every week, as you know, if you've been here at all, we light a chalice during our service. This morning it was our new chalice that has been so recently gifted to us. And the story behind that is that during World War II, the flaming chalice was developed as a secret symbol for Unitarians working in Europe to help Jews escape from Nazi-occupied areas. So people would even scratch images of the flaming chalice in the dirt outside their home in villages, so people knew that was a safe house. So we've been lighting chalices, UU congregations, during our worship services ever since as a reminder of courage and the fight for justice. And at Hanukkah, when we consider the story of the Maccabees, their long struggle of courage and justice, the flames of the menorah and the flame of our chalice seem different, certainly, but complementary in their reflections of one another. So as we continue our multi-part faith series that explores different voices in Unitarian Universalism, we see once again that our liberal faith is unique in that people are invited to retain who they are, their identities, what they bring to the table, but also be part of a UU community as well. Those among us who identify as Jewish are invited to continue understanding that identity as they see fit. It is welcome here, just as any of your other identities might be welcome here as well. But our fourth principle asks us to search for truth and meaning in a responsible way. So I think it's inevitable that however one initially identifies, whether it's Christian or atheist or Jewish or Buddhist or whatever, that then becoming part of a Unitarian Universalist congregation means we are going to invite you to deeply examine that identity at some point. And in that process, people often discover they are more of what they maybe thought they left behind, or perhaps they're less than what they thought they identified with when they came in the door. The destination is never certain on this faith journey, but it is the responsible and even sometimes painful journey of faith identity that Unitarian Universalism asks each and every one of us to take. This journey can also be surprising. Back when I was an assistant minister at another church, I was tasked with leading a Hanukkah service. Now, this congregation had a very strong and active Jewish awareness group who I could feel would be paying close attention to this service. I prepared with care, My research leading me to the conclusion that a contemporary contextual reading of the Hanukkah story didn't focus so much on the miracle lamp, but rather on the persistence, resistance, and courage of the Maccabees. Some might even critique them as ruthless zealots, too often prone to the same kind of violence they had been the recipients of. Like any good, true story, there was a lot of complexity there. Well, I was pretty nervous when it came time to do this service. Before my formal study of religion had taken place, I'd primarily known it as a story of magic oil and potato pancakes, and I wasn't even quite sure of that connection. So what would this congregation think of me telling this story? I was barely mentioning that miracle oil, but instead talking about the desecration of the temple, Mattathias and his family hiding in the mountains, the years of planning and persistence and violent revolt. Because the congregation had an excellent traveling mic system, and because I only preached once a month, what a luxury. I generally preached without a script, walking around as I spoke, which had already convinced a few people, mostly former Christians, that I was secretly some kind of incognito televangelist, just waiting to convert everybody to fundamental Christianity. What would people think of me telling the Hanukkah story? Afterwards, an 80-something-year-old Jewish member of the congregation came to me and sheepishly said, "I actually didn't know the Hanukkah story. Not really. I knew it was something about the temple and the oil, but I didn't really know the rest of it." Sometimes the triumphs of ministry are not what you expect. And I thought then and there, what a gift Unitarian Universalism is. Not just for people to learn cross-culturally, but also for us to examine our own religious identities. What a joy that we have this space to step back and tell stories that we sometimes think we know. And this is true across all faith traditions. Stephen Prothero's book, Religious Literacy, What Every American Needs to Know and Doesn't, great book. It lays out the case that despite the United States being one of the most religious places on the earth, we are also a nation of religious illiterates, even about the religion we identify as, particularly when it comes to Christianity. But it can also be true for Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, etc. There is much assumed about what people know about their own religion, but little invitation to truly learn and wrestle with it. Unitarian Universalism is not only a faith tradition that invites one to engage with other cultures, but also an invitation to engage more deeply, more comprehensively within our own religious identities and backgrounds. When we do it right, for example, like when we think about the December holidays, winter solstice, and Hanukkah, and Christmas, we all come away more enriched by experiencing these holidays from engagement both inside and outside the traditions. Christmas inside, and I visited a few mega churches in Texas, so I can say this for a fact, Christmas inside can be an overwhelming push to recognize the birth of a Savior, something off-putting to those of us Unitarian Universalists who also identify as Jewish or something other than Christianity. But Christmas both inside and outside, as Unitarian Universalism asks us to consider it, calls us to recognize the parts of that story that read as pure fiction, but also reveals deeper themes of hope and hospitality that come from that Savior story, inviting in a far richer and far more inclusive faith experience. And the same goes for Hanukkah. From an insider perspective, it can be a miracle story, but from a combination insider-outsider perspective, we can wrestle with it more as a story of persistence. We can wrestle with the complexity of oppression and resistance, and we can really examine deeply those places of hope, real and aspirational. By engaging with religious traditions and events as both outsiders and insiders, which is what our UU community is inclined to do because of our natural theological diversity, we are uniquely positioned to explore multiple layers of any given religious event or idea. And this can be enriching, however you may identify. This is true in a broader sense for those who hold both UU and Jewish identities. Rob Eller Isaacs is a UU minister in Minnesota, and he writes about his time during college looking to deepen his own liberal Jewish identity by joining a Hasidic Jewish family for dinner. He says, "We washed in the ritual manner and sat down to dinner. The rabbi's wife said the blessing. Bread was broken, soup was served. Then the rabbi asked, 'What is your name?' 'Robert Louis Isaacs,' I replied. 'And your father's name?' he asked. 'Alexander Joseph Isaacs.' 'You see,' he said, addressing others at the table, 'his family has drifted so far from faith that both he and his father have foreign names. If he stays, we will have to give them both new names. We'll make them real Jews again.'" In that moment, Eller Isaacs writes, "I remembered a dear friend, also a Unitarian Universalist of Jewish ancestry, who, when asked why he had become a Unitarian Universalist, said simply, 'UUs are the only people I know who will let me be the Jew I am.'" Of course, this way of thinking of being only one correct kind of member of a religious community, this isn't true amongst all rabbis and Jewish communities, and we know that so many other faith traditions, particularly Christianity in this country, can also exhibit this way of thinking. But I think it does illustrate how important the space offered by Unitarian Universalism can be for some people who may not find an open enough space in the tradition they were born into. And yet they're not looking to leave all of that tradition behind. They carry it with them, and we welcome that. Dara Olant, a UU minister in Virginia, speaks of the importance of space for religious identities to evolve. She writes, "Jewish identities are diverse, multifold, and fluid. No experience of religion must be static or frozen. Today, my UU Jewish identity calls me to more fully embrace my own wholeness, and with this comes a responsibility to continuously practice dissolving inner barriers while joyously calling on others to do the same." My dear friend Denny Davidoff, who died this year and who I miss very much, said, "I left the synagogue life of my childhood because of a theological and liturgical quarrel. I questioned the concept of God. I questioned the language of Lord. I questioned the whole deal. In my college years, I'd become an agnostic and a humanist, and I was ripe for what I found later in the Unitarian Church in Westport, Connecticut. But I never stopped being a cultural Jew and a Zionist. I never stopped celebrating the holidays that joined me to the people and traditions of both my father's and mother's families, to whom I am still devoted. I abandoned rigid theological tenets and patriarchal worship practices, but I did not abandon my Jewish identity. That was always a keeper for me." One of the things I loved about Denny is that she was so forthright about who she was, a walking embodiment of what it meant to hold multiple identities at once. And we were blessed as a larger faith movement that we had her leadership, serving as she did as Unitarian Universalist Association moderator. That's pretty much our highest level volunteer position. And she was instrumental in the time that she had that role in actually articulating our seven principles. I mean, she told those people to behave and get those principles written. I've heard the story from her lips. Denny's contribution to UU history was certainly not the first of its kind. The Jewish Unitarian connection runs deep in our movement. You may not have heard of Rabbi Solomon Hirsch Sonnenschein, known as Rabbi Sunshine. He came from Hungary, where he had served as a rabbi in synagogues in the 1860s. And he came to the United States, and immediately he noted that the Unitarians and Reformed Jews were wrestling with the same ideas.
how to intelligently integrate new understandings of the world with older understandings. How can worship practices be relevant in this new age? How do we let go of old ideas about heaven and hell and work on living an ethical life here and in the now? So Rabbi Sunshine was at the forefront of a movement then to bring Reform Jews and Unitarians together, much in the way that Unitarians and Universalists would be brought together later, almost 100 years later. Each was fighting for tolerance, freedom, and the religion of humanity. Now, alas, as we know, this merger didn't actually happen. It ended up being too complicated to figure out what rituals, languages, symbols, and stories and figures would emerge as the centerpiece of this new faith movement. But thinking about the possibility of that merger is a fascinating one to consider today. I mean, how might we be different? So however we might be different, whether our services still took place on Sunday morning or if they didn't look so Protestant in their structure, the fact is we would probably still, here at this moment in time, be at this point of examining what it means to be a multi-faith religious community. Or to be even more daring in the language I use, a religious community that is inclusive of other religions, a religion for religions that is not necessarily religious in the way we have traditionally defined the word. An unreligious religion of religions. There we go. So that might be confusing. But I think confusion is one of the gifts that Unitarian Universalists welcome in. The confusion that comes from being multiple things at once, and you know what? Really, that isn't confusion. It just looks that way sometimes at a first glance. Because what it really is something beautiful in its complexity. My Aunt Lee died this week. She was an avid golfer, ballroom dancer, and Rachel Maddow fan. I'm so glad to have at least one of those in the family. I credit her for being an early teacher of how one holds multiple identities at once. Born into a very Protestant family, she converted to Judaism upon marriage, and yet every Christmas day, she and her husband and children, a very Jewish family, opened their home to her larger family, knowing full well that while they celebrated Hanukkah, the rest of us were celebrating Christmas. And they invited us in for a truly interfaith experience, never policing who was celebrating what, but rather lifting up the fact that we were all together in celebration. My childhood sense of Hanukkah and Judaism was one of hospitality and kindness, good food and good conversation that nourished the heart and soul. I'm going to miss knowing she's around this December. And I'm so grateful for people who are able to live proudly with multiple identities. When trouble brews, as it has so often lately, I find myself looking for wisdom and comfort from those who have lived lives of intersecting identities. For it's in those places of intersection that we often find depths of wisdom we would not otherwise know. I spoke recently of the anti-Semitism that's been on the rise in this country. We've seen all too recently the tragic and violent consequences that can come from that. The story of the Maccabees feels all too relevant in light of these kinds of things. Oppression for those who are Jewish is not relegated solely to the past. And so let us have gratitude. Gratitude for this space of community this holiday season, a place of community that invites us to bring in our whole selves with all our identities, where Jewish traditions can live on alongside other traditions. And when we do this well, then we serve as a model for what larger society does not do so well. When we are living as a loving interfaith community, then we truly have something to share with the larger world. If we can continue to be intentional about how we do that here,
then perhaps we can be intentional about bringing that to the larger world. And isn't that the holy oil, the miracle, the lamp that burns day and night, long past when we thought the light would go out? Isn't that the miracle? The attainable, albeit challenging, miracle that we want for the world.
Our offering is a vital way to show our gratitude for this community. By giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world. We thank you for your generosity. Please don't forget, if you use scrip, to go ahead and put it in the memo line or drop it in those envelopes.
For our closing hymn, we will be singing number 1028, The Fire of Commitment. So please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.
Thank you.
We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. Let us join our hands for closing words. Let us remember to not only light our candle, but to keep the flame lit. Until we meet again, amen, shalom, salam, namaste, and blessed be. Go now in peace.